Welcome to Steppin' Out Radio, true stories of people that have overcome all sorts of adversity in their lives, true stories of inspiration and transformation. And we have a very special guest today. I'm Denise McEntee, your host. And I read his book, and I really pushed for him to come in person because I found the book very, very interesting and fascinating. And my guest today is Dr. Howard Samuels. He is the founder of the Hills Treatment Center, which is in L.A., but he also wrote this great book, so get a pen while I pause a second, and it's called Alive Again. And there's a reason for that title, because he really has lived two lives, but it's fascinating. So check it out on Amazon. I'm sure you can get it. Just do a Google search of Alive Again by Dr. Howard C, as in Charles, Samuels. But we begin at the beginning on Steppin' Out Radio, and his son is also with us, so we're giving a shout out. And we begin at the beginning of the person's story. So how did it begin for you? How did it start?
Well, first of all, Denise, thank you for having me, you know, on the
Thanks
show.
Thanks for coming. I mean it.
I definitely think that bringing recovery out of the shadows is an extremely important part of us being able to let people know out there that they don't have to live in shame and guilt anymore.
Right.
And that there is a way to freedom.
Exactly.
I grew up, I live in L.A. now, but I grew up here in New York, and I grew up in a pretty, successful family.
I'd say.
my father was a businessman and a politician, ran for governor of New York a number of times, was always very, very productive and very hard working. My mother was a bit of an alcoholic. There were eight of us kids. My father's mantra was, what have you done to be productive today?
Mm-hmm. Okay. He would ask you that at the dinner
table. Oh, yeah. Would ask us that at the dinner table constantly.
Wow.
And, and everybody wanted my father's acceptance, the pat on the back.
Sure.
And that was the way to try to get that recognition, mm-hmm. My father went to MIT. My brother then went to MIT. My sisters went to Columbia, Sarah Lawrence, the top schools in the country. And when it got down to me, I grew up with a learning disability. Mm-hmm. So, and back in the 60s, because I was born in 52, so I'm 61, having dyslexia, having a learning disability wasn't quite really known on how to deal with that kind of disability. Mm-hmm. So I grew up, and I had a belief system, because school was so hard for me.
Sure.
My negative belief system turned to be, I am stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile,
as a total aside, I read something recently where there's a very, very high percentage of CEOs that are dyslexic.
Yes.
Because they had to do so many different ways to try to, because back in the day they didn't know. Now
right.
It would be,
Right, now it's a very sort of common, thread in our educational system.
Right.
Where there are ways to, treat that and be mm-hmm. aware of that. So my belief system was that I was stupid, mm-hmm. and I grew up in this very high, achieving family, this very bright family. And so at a very early age, I basically checked out, okay? Mm-hmm. I had no self-confidence. I had no self-esteem. And so I sort of went the opposite way. I would get into massive fights with my father. Mm-hmm. I did horribly in school. I started acting out at 15 and 16. I remember I started smoking weed at 15. And I remember we moved to Washington, D.C., and my father was in Johnson's cabinet. Lyndon Johnson's cabinet, mm-hmm. and I was going to some school, and I remember, I was driving around one of the kids, and he was making deliveries at people's homes.
Wow.
And we went back to my house, and I knew he was selling some, drugs. I didn't really quite understand what it was at that point. And came back to my house, and he took out a packet of heroin, took out a packet of cocaine, took out a spoon, put it in there, cooked it up, shot it, and then asked me if I wanted to get off. Mm-hmm. I had never done anything like that in my life. Never done cocaine, never done heroin, never shot anything. Wow. And my first reaction is absolutely.
Right.
Now, for me to have such a effort kind of attitude, right?
Without thinking, this I could get addicted. I could.
Yeah, I didn't care about anything, you know. And I must say, when I took that shot, it took everything away. It took away all the fear. Took away all the insecurity. Took away all the lack of confidence. Mm-hmm. I mean, I saw God.
Right.
You know, and for me, that was the beginning of me really going on an amazing drug run that, you know, took me to, you know, we moved back to New York. I was arrested at 17 in the Village just for some hashish. I got away with it as youthful offender. What made it interesting was that my father was running for governor, unfortunately. Ooh. At that time, so I had my 15 minutes of fame where I was in Time magazine, the front page of the Daily News, I mean, the Post, I mean, all over, okay? And then, you know, I got off with that charge. And when I started to get even more into my addiction, I had a great plan. You know, at the age of 19 years old, my plan was to go to Afghanistan and be an international drug dealer.
Wow.
That was my plan. That was my goal in life.
Right. Okay? That was what you decided.
Yeah. I mean, I decided the drugs in New York weren't good enough. Mm-hmm. They weren't pure enough. So, you know, I'm going to go to the source.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my plan was is that, you know, I bought an ounce of cocaine, and I was strung out on heroin at the time. I would go to Boulder, Colorado, where my sister lived, sell the ounce in grams. Then I'd have enough money. I'd buy 100 pounds of pot. I would take a train back to Manhattan, sell the 100 pounds of pot, make a lot of cash, and fly off to Kabul and live happily ever after as a drug addict.
Mm-hmm,
I had connections in the post office in Kabul.
Anybody think it was odd you were going to?
No.
No?
No, my family didn't, you know. Didn't really know what my plans were.
Okay.
You know, you have to understand that. If I got the cash, I was out of here.
Okay.
You know, it was all about getting the cash, okay?
Got it. Okay.
And, by the time I got to Kennedy Airport, they took me, the feds, back then they did not have, you know, metal detectors. They had feds that had certain profiles.
Sure.
And so, you know, they grabbed me, took me out of line, these feds, put me up against the wall, found all these drugs, took me to a room, handcuffed me to a chair, started to interrogate me. In my wallet, they pulled out a map of Afghanistan, right?
Wow.
And they found all these assortment of drugs that I had on me and started to interrogate me as to, you know, what I was doing, what the operation was, you know, and I obviously, you know, had an attitude and wasn't going to tell them anything. And mm-hmm. so they booked me and I fought the case in court.
Mm-hmm.
My father's lawyers fought the case in court. And I lost because they went into the court's chambers with the DA and the judge. And the feds said they arrested me because I had the profile of a potential hijacker. So I had to, well, actually, I thought it was sort of sexy at that time.
You don't look like a hijacker to me.
I was targeted as a, you know, potential hijacker, and that's why the feds, you know, searched me at Kennedy Airport. And I fought the case in court. I lost.
Mm-hmm.
And the judge gave me a choice of 4 years in prison or a year in rehab.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I went to rehab.
Sure.
I spent a year in rehab, lived in Brooklyn in a halfway house, The program was also located in Soho on Spring Street,
sure,
here in New York City. I spent a year there, and I got to say that saved my life in, mm-hmm, a way that it taught me how to identify feelings. Because, see, I was never taught how to express feelings, how to, you know, share them, how to talk about my feelings are hurt, or to say that I'm angry. Mm-hmm. You know, it's such an interesting thing, but, you know, my parents had no clue how to deal with these things called feelings and how to manage them in a healthy way.
Right.
And that is as important as learning how to walk.
Sure.
You know?
And you're probably sensitive, so it's, yeah.
Yes, I'm sensitive, although my son Cooper here will probably debate that fact.
Well, you maybe
it's because I don't say enough yeses to him. I give him too many noes.
All every dad in the planet and mom.
And but, you know, so this program taught me how to manage my feelings in a healthy way instead of self-destructing. Now, the one thing they did not teach me was that I was an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. You see, I'm a drug addict, mm-hmm, okay? I loved drugs, I loved heroin, I loved cocaine, I loved pills, you know, even though heroin was my primary. But when I got out of that rehab, I drank. Because they didn't teach me I was an alcoholic. They didn't teach that there was a connection between the two. And, you know, I drank normally watching the game. Alcohol was never a big deal. But because there was that bridge,
right?
Okay, that bridge ended up leading me back to doing a little blow, doing a little pills. And after 5 years of chipping away a little at drugs, 5 years later, I'm back shooting heroin again.
Because, okay, your defenses are down.
My defenses are down.
This isn't a bad idea.
And yeah, that's why, you know, for us drug addicts and alcoholics, you know, there is no middle ground here.
Right.
You know, you have to be totally clean and sober if you're going to have a chance of turning your life around on a long-term basis.
Right.
And be able to prosper and have relationships and all of that in a very healthy way. And so, you know, I started drinking, I started going back using drugs, and I gotta say, I mean, it wasn't until I was 32 years old that my family started to intervene on me, mm-hmm, and thank God they did, because I gotta say, my family saved my life. If it wasn't for my family, I wouldn't be here today.
They didn't give up.
They did not give up, and they went out and got advice from other drug professionals and alcoholic professionals that told them how to deal with me, which was really to cut me off, mm-hmm, so I could really hit a bottom. Mm-hmm. And that's what they did. And I ended up going back into treatment at 32 years old. Mm-hmm. I went to Phoenix House, mm-hmm, which is here in New York and also out in California. It's a 2-year program, but I was like, I'm not going for 2 years. You got to be high if you think I'm going to go do that. Okay.
I'll go for
I went for 2 months. Right. I said I'd go for 2 months. Mm-hmm. Because really, I told them all I need is a refresher course. Been there, done that, right?
Right.
Which was, I'm still doing it my way.
Sure.
Okay, I hadn't totally surrendered. And when it was close to 2 months, they woke me up in the middle of the night one night and told me that my father had died of a heart attack.
Sorry.
And I had never gone through such intense pain before in my life. Mm-hmm. And I remember the program director, you know, wanted to send somebody back to New York with me for the funeral. I said, look, I have to make my own decisions. You know, I don't want you to send anybody back with me. You know, I need to figure this out. Mm-hmm. And you know what? He respected that decision and allowed me to be a man, mm-hmm, and to hopefully make the right decision to come back. And I got to say, I went back to New York and I did all the funeral arrangements. And when I buried my father, I made a commitment to him that he would never have to worry about me again.
Wow.
And it was at that point that I had my psychic shift. Mm-hmm. That was my psychic shift where I saw how short this thing called life truly is. And I got back on that plane and I went to Phoenix House and they said, jump. I said, how high? Mm-hmm. And that was 29 years ago. And that is still my attitude. I go to AA meetings. I've turned my life around, but my treatment is not over. Mm-hmm. Because every time I walk into an AA meeting, I work on humility, I work on being teachable, I put my hand out to be of service, mm-hmm, because that is the code now,
right,
is that we have to work our primary purpose, which is to stay sober and help another human being, mm-hmm, okay? And it's in those 29 years of being clean and sober that I finally was able to find my passion.
Which is what? Which
still
is.
Helping people. Mm-hmm. Okay? And you have to understand something. I mean, it took me the first 6 or 7 years of my sobriety where I did an assortment of jobs. You know, being on the road with rock and roll bands, repping directors, and none of it worked for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't happy doing it.
Right.
And, you know, finally, I hit a bottom in relationships in L.A. where I started getting my drug from women. Mm-hmm. I started to become a love addict. I started to engage with looking for that short-term self-esteem through validation through women. Mm-hmm. And I hit a bottom. Mm-hmm. And I hit a bottom that was as painful mm-hmm. as my bottom with drugs and alcohol. And it was through that pain that I was able to come to the realization that I had to be able to find a spirituality. Mm-hmm. I had to find a career that had passion and love. And I realized the only time I was really happy is when I worked at Phoenix House when I got out of treatment. And I remember sitting on a stoop at 74th Street, and a 16-year-old kid wanted to leave and shoot heroin. And I was able to talk him down. I was able to break through his defenses, and he started crying. And in that moment, he decided not to go shoot heroin that day. And for me to have been around that and to have been a part in that moment, in that period of time, to be somewhat influential to help that kid not go and shoot heroin that day, I realized that I had a higher purpose.
That's powerful.
And, you know, and I went back to school. I went and got my master's. I went and got my doctorate. And understand something. My beast would always told me that I couldn't do it because I was stupid, which was my old belief system when I was a kid. And I did the papers. I worked through my, you know, learning disability. You know, I got the master's. I got the doctorate. I got the 3,000 supervised hours. It took me 7 years from the day that I went and got my master's till the day I finished my doctorate and my license, where today, you know, I have a private practice in L.A. I run an amazing treatment program, you know, called the Hills Treatment Center. I have an amazing staff. I mean, I love what I do.
Yeah, it shows. And you wrote an amazing book. And tell us, we have about a minute left. Tell us about the book, Alive Again.
Well, Alive Again is really, you know, my process. It has two things in the book. It is my process, which I just sort of gave you an overview. But it's there to help families. Mm-hmm. It's there to help addicts, alcoholics who do not know where to turn for help. It is a self-help book. It's not a memoir.
No,
you know,
but it's got a little bit of both because
yes.
The story is fascinating, and there is that feeling if Howard can do it, you know, I can
exactly.
do it. But then you impart all this great information.
Yeah, because I was a hardcore dope fiend, okay,
right.
And hope to die dope fiend.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting here today with my beautiful boys sitting next to me, my two
so
beautiful
cute.
Daughters,
right.
A wife. I'm married. Yep. I mean, I have a life to be proud of.
Dr. Howard Samuel, it's been a privilege. Thank you so much. Get the book, Alive Again. You'll hear more stories up next. You're listening to Steppin' Out.